1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Park Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. Today's edition of the program, the Bears lost on Monday, but Justin Fields made some real progress. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with Chris Bowden, the Blackhawks live reporter and the WGN-TV sports reporter. We talk with him about some Blackhawks news, Bears football, and so much more. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to watch more of this show, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. I want to start today with this. I'm not really a moral victory guy. I don't care about good feelings and positivity. I care about the truth. That's why a lot of you watch me or listen to me on the radio. I'm not the Bears PR person. I'm not waving pom-poms and being a cheerleader for this team. I'm going to tell you like it is. If they suck, I'll say it. If they perform, well, I'll say that too. I'm objective. Monday Night Football was a tough loss for the Bears. It was a winnable game, and we'll talk about why they lost it. Hint, hint, it's a lot having to do with Matt Nagy. But we did see progress. We actually saw a decent game from Justin Fields. What have I said for the majority of this season? Wins and losses don't really matter. It's all about development. And hey, I get it. You get so enraged during the game, you want to see a win. I do it too. I just said I'm not a moral victory guy. I don't like having that attitude. I'd rather judge this team based off wins and losses. Based off of real numbers, not, oh, this feels better or this is getting better. But you have to rethink your priorities when you're developing your supposed next franchise QB. Things change. And from Justin Fields on Monday night, I think we all got a glimpse of what he could be. And it wasn't bad at all. One touchdown, one pick. 58% completion percentage. A bit wary there. Made a couple of good throws when needed and drove the Bears downfield with 3 minutes to go. And that is the big key here. That's my number one takeaway from this game. He may not have had the best game, Justin Fields. He did make some mistakes with throws early. Didn't have any help from the wide receiving core, too. Running for his life again. I mean, these same themes are resounding. Each and every game we see him play out. But with the Bears needing a score, 3 minutes, 2.5 minutes to go, Justin Fields delivered. He actually drove the Bears downfield. Would have been contention to win the game at that point. I knew there was enough time left, and I expected Pittsburgh to answer, which they did. But even then, with seconds remaining, Justin Fields gave him one more chance again to win the game. I'm not saying Cairo Santos and a 65-yard field goal was a good idea, but the point is, they were in position. Fields and the Bears had to do something to get to that point, too. And they did. They made it there. And Santos had some miracle kick that would have won the game. Fields got him there. I was very pleasantly surprised with his poise in that sort of situation. I was. Really. Oh, and by the way, I'll take 291 passing yards all day. And 45 rushing yards. I'll take that all day long. For a guy who has no O-line, for a guy who has spotty wide receivers, no weapons, and as we all know, a horrible head coach, those are great numbers. Imagine he was in the right system, New England. What if he was with Bill Belichick? He had a good group around him, good defense. He was in Mac Jones' position. I think Justin Fields would be a knockout for Rookie of the Year. That's not to diminish Mac Jones. He's done well over there. But the point is, you could tell at this point, if Justin Fields gets something around him, something to help him, he'll actually be okay. And I don't mind, in general, running quarterbacks who may have less passing yards but more rushing yards. In Fields' case, he'll have both. I can't even remember the last time the Bears had a 300-yard passing game. They almost got it on Monday. Almost. That close. 9 yards off. Plus 45 rushing yards from the quarterback. Facing one of the NFL's best defenses, the Bears put up 27 points. Again, not a moral victory guy. I'm just stating facts. The fact is, there was improvement. We saw better things across the board for the Bears. Now, penalties? You can say whatever you want about, oh, the game was fixed, bad flags, and might be true. I don't know. Here's what I do know, though. You have to be disciplined as a team. You have to be. You have to be disciplined. What does that reflect on? All the penalties. Yeah, the players, sure, but more so the coach. I saw a lot of people saying, well, Justin Fields did good with Matt Nagy time to keep him. I saw some people say that. I direct you to the penalties. I direct you to the undisciplined play by the Bears. I guarantee you, had there been 5 less penalties, they probably would have won that game. Gave up over 120 penalty yards. Yeah, good luck winning anything when you're giving up that many. So for the Matt Nagy lovers, whomever you may be, probably want to stay anonymous at this point, but if you're out there, realize that just because Justin Fields played well doesn't mean it reflects on Matt Nagy. More so, reflects on Bill Lazor. And if you don't believe me, well, the penalties are, to an extent, Matt Nagy's fault and stupid mistakes by the Bears. Fault. Who makes this team undisciplined? Who's supposed to coach them to be better, to be mentally in the game? Not the players themselves. Coach. Head coach. Matt Nagy. I've talked to a number of experts, number of reporters on this program, and the consensus is he won't be back next year. Now, they said the same thing last year, but I really believe it's not going to work for him. His time is up. I've seen enough. You've seen enough. That's it. It's over. And that's not a personal attack. Okay, I'm sure he's a really good guy, nice guy off the field. But the fact of the matter is, we've seen enough. We've seen enough for Matt Nagy. What more do we need to know? We saw a great first year with a great defense. We saw a couple of 500 seasons, and now we're seeing a 3-6 year. And the development of Justin Fields, it looked good now, but remember, who's calling plays? How undisciplined is this team on the field? And do you really think Matt Nagy is going to be the guy for Justin Fields to latch on to? Come on. Really? Every coach and quarterback has to have a special connection if you want to work in the NFL. Do you actually think there's going to be some special connection between Nagy and Fields?
He would have seen it already. He would have seen it. It would have been obvious. Hey, they have a good chemistry. They work together. They don't. They don't. This was the first encouraging game by Justin Fields. Really. 49ers game was okay. This was better. Much better. So the first time all year we see something encouraging. Taking this long for him and Matt Nagy to get on the same page. And who knows what's going to happen still. Bears are on a bye now coming up, but still. Who knows what's going to happen. Justin Fields can't replicate this. Or this is supposedly a ceiling, one touchdown, one pick, fine, but that's a reflection on the coach by that point. Matt Nagy's going to be coaching for his job over these next couple of games here. This is really going to determine if he goes or stays. The Bears are 3-6, too. I know at the beginning of the year the narrative was, well, even if the Bears don't make the playoffs, if there's development for Justin Fields, they'll keep Nagy. I think at this point, Justin Fields has to go off for Nagy to stay. And regardless of that, we'll never forget how this whole thing started. Right? We'll never forget how Justin Fields was sacked 12 times against Cleveland. Who's to blame there? 6 of 20 for 68 yards and a start for Justin Fields. Who's to blame? Maybe partially Justin Fields, sure, but the majority is Matt Nagy. How about the loss to Tampa? Yeah, that was on Justin Fields and Matt Nagy. See, these are things I won't forget. And I hope the Bears don't either. When they're evaluating Matt Nagy at the end of the year, I hope the consensus is, well, you had some good times, Matt, but here are the bad ones, too. And we remember them. And we won't forget them. And this is how you're going to be evaluated, not, hey, a couple of good games, bad teams, good job, or something like that. It's not going to work. It's really not going to work for the Bears. Not going to get done. Found a very interesting stat, by the way. You need to hear this from J.J. Zachariasen. Quote, Justin Fields' first four starts, 3.8 rushing attempts, and 17 rushing yards per game for the Bears. Justin Fields' last three starts, 8.7 rushing attempts, and 62 rushing yards per game. Well, the Bears are deciding, finally, hey, let's let him run the football. Only took you four games. That's my point. This is so apparent here. I just talked to Rob Motti about this. You'll see it in the interview. John Harbaugh, Lamar Jackson. You do realize that when Lamar was drafted, they talked about making him a wide receiver. And some coaches were willing to do it. But no, John Harbaugh said, I will cater to you. What do you need, Lamar? How can you be great in the NFL under me? And it worked. Matt Nagy, there's proof here he didn't do that. First four starts for Fields. Four rushing attempts, 17 rushing yards per game. Now, nine about, and 62 rushing yards again. Once again, it's Matt Nagy's stubbornness getting in the way. And that's why at this point, it's so apparent that it's over. I don't care what happens. I don't care how great Fields plays. The fact of the matter is, we have numbers here to corroborate a Matt Nagy firing. And hell, a Ryan Pace firing, too. His offensive line is atrocious. I mean, you couldn't do anything. You couldn't do anything to help out a rookie quarterback. What, do you expect him to run? Oh, he runs. He could run away from the pressure. Well, that doesn't work all the time, and we've seen it. This kid's getting beat up right away. And sure, you could say, well, he'll earn his stripes, or the contrary opinion, which is, could get hurt and could scar him. I just wish he had a good offensive line for one game. That'd be amazing. I'd love to see Justin Fields with 3 seconds to throw the ball all the time in the world to sling it downfield and make a play. Instead, we're seeing the same old, same old. We're seeing no protection. We're seeing pockets collapsing. We're seeing Fields on pretty much every play run for his life. You're not going to win much doing that. This may not be the winning year yet, but when that time comes, which could be as soon as next year or the year after, you're not going to win with that O-line. By the way, get this. quote, "I'm not entirely sure how you can get an illegal formation penalty coming out of a timeout, but then again, hashtag Bears." Matt Nagy calls a timeout, tells him to play, illegal formation. These guys don't listen to him. They don't speak to him. They're not on the same level as him. And it's just so apparent right now. It is. And that's not even a bias against Matt Nagy. I'm being honest here. When you look at stuff like that, when you look at the stat sheet for Justin Fields, now running the ball more after four starts for what? What did you have to wait for? You knew Justin Fields could run. What are we waiting on here? We're waiting on your ego to calm down so better plays could be called. It's apparent. I see it. I see it with my own two eyes. Everybody else does too. It's not just me. You need to find somebody who's going to cater to Justin Fields. Who is going to be Justin Fields' advocate? That's the key here. Who's going to advocate for Justin Fields? Could you find a coach who promises to do that? Doesn't just say it. Matt Nagy said he'd advocate for Mitch Trubisky. Look how that worked out. Now he's going to say, "I'm advocating for Justin Fields." Well, look how it's been working out. Monday was the first time it actually worked out okay. Change does need to be made. Can't be committing all those penalties either. I don't care if some of them were BS. Some of them were. There were others that were rightfully called. Illegal formation out of a timeout. That sums up the Bears. That sums up their discipline under Matt Nagy. That's when you know it's time to let them loose. I was encouraged by Justin Fields' play. I really was. Win or loss, I was happy with the way he performed. It's only going to get better, I hope. Maybe by the end of the year, we'll see a 3-touchdown game, 300 yards, 100 rushing yards. Who knows? We don't know. It's possible. It's also apparent that the past 3 weeks, he's gotten better and better. From Tampa, which was his worst game, to San Fran, and now Pittsburgh. And a bye, too. Now, he's gotten better. The Bears have slowly but surely adjusted their play calling for Fields. An encouraging spot. The Bears are probably the most encouraging 3-16, but nevertheless, remember, they are 3-6. And that game was winnable. That's the problem. It was winnable. They didn't have all those penalties. They would have won. Think about this. Bears started on a drive at their own 48. First play, 25-yard catch to Cole Kmet, and they punted. And they punted. This is what I'm talking about. Stuff like this. This is why you're not winning football games. And that's going to be your problem. And who does that reflect on? Excessive penalties. Not catering to Justin Fields' strengths yet. Not having a good team around him. That's Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace. You know, Ryan Pace has been here for a while. I mean, he was here during the Jay Cutler era still. And he's still here. And what's been done? What's been done? Show me. Show me results. Don't see any. I don't see anything. I've seen two playoff appearances. It's not enough. And as for Matt Nagy, don't even get me started. He ruined Mitch Trubisky, and right now he's on a path to ruin Justin Fields. The supposed offensive guru is ruining two top quarterbacks, top picks. The writing's on the wall here. If you don't see it yet, well, I hope this video enlightened you a bit. You should see it. This is really apparent now. If Justin Fields wants to be who he's supposed to be, Matt Nagy needs to go. It's that simple. You want Justin Fields to be Patrick Mahomes, and not this kind of Patrick Mahomes, but the prime Patrick Mahomes. Matt Nagy's not going to be the guy to prop him up. He's going to hinder him. And this team and the personnel is going to hinder him. Think to yourself, who does that reflect on? Not a Justin Fields issue. It's a Ryan Pace and a Matt Nagy issue. And if they're gone, and you bring in somebody new, well, things could get better. Justin Fields, of course, would have to learn a new offense. Not impossible. Maybe it'd work better for him. But these are the things you have to think about. We're done looking at wins and losses here, at least for now. They're 3-6. They're not making the playoffs. They aren't. They need a miracle. So what's the next best thing? We have to look at, did Justin Fields progress? How's he working with Matt Nagy? How's he working with his team? And even though we saw a great performance on Monday night, the whole track record from start to finish hasn't been the best. And I think it's apparent to everybody. If Fields has good enough talent, just a competent O-line even around him, and good play calling, he'll succeed. If he doesn't, well, he'll see games like Tampa Bay more often. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Chris Bowden comes up next, so stay tuned. Sports Talk Chicago. It's John Zaglula, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's the host of Blackhawks Live on WGN Radio, a WGN-TV sports reporter, and a 35-year sports media veteran. Please welcome Chris Bowden to the program. Chris, it's great to have you on. How are you?
Good to be back on with you, John. How about you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being here. What's been your reaction to this entire Blackhawks news over the past couple of weeks?
I think, like everybody, sadness, shock, disappointment, knowing that, you know, over the course of the years, I built a relationship with some of those people. And it's not a case where you have to say, I think I got to know them, because, I mean, we have all gone back and made certain mistakes in our lives, be it personal, professional. But for the magnitude of this to have come out as it should, and for the courage and bravery of Kyle Beach to finally come forward and share his story with everything that he's been dealing with through the years, knowing that it was a situation that probably could have been safely and properly avoided at the time, despite the focus being on the big picture. I thought there were avenues that they could have taken where, even if it did come out shortly after the Stanley Cup victory, I think people would have been understanding that cachet would have been built, and whether this would have been a great enough distraction to prevent them from winning a Stanley Cup or not. Obviously the wrong steps were taken. It's going to take a long time to correct it and build trust and faith back with a lot of fans in that organization, and rightly so. And all you can do is try and correct the mistakes of the past. And I believe they're trying to do that. They still need to do more based on everything that we're hearing in the public, and as they try to make this as good as possible, but also making sure it doesn't happen again. Even this week, we've seen the trickle-down effect with what's happened in Anaheim with Bob Murray and the NHL encouraging them, all teams, to come forward if they have any instances that they think, you know, maybe be cause for concern based on the way things have happened in the past. And let's be honest, I think as much as the NHL wanted to get this right, I still think there were mistakes made in the press conference last week by Gary Bettman and by Bill Daly with how they presented themselves and how they kind of tiptoed through what should have been an all-in, let's dive into this. Yes, we will help anyone who needs help. I'm talking about this John Doe 2 situation, where the league should have taken even greater ownership despite what we've just seen here in the past 2 or 3 weeks.
Were you expecting this sort of fallout, like to see Stan Bowman go, to see Joel Quenneville lose his job too?
It's the right thing to happen. I was curious as to whether this current makeup of the hierarchy in the Blackhawks organization with Danny and Jamie and the decision to elevate Stan, 11 months ago, to become vice president of hockey operations and to hold that cachet, whether the report found him to be, you know, part of that decision-making process in May of 2010, whether they would have gone ahead and made this tough decision. You heard a lot of people say throughout this investigation until it was released, anyone who was responsible or turned a blind eye to what should have been done should hold responsibility. And in the end, it was the right thing to do. I was curious to see whether they would go that far if in fact they learned that Stan was a part of that. But I'm glad for the organization's sake right now and for that upper management to make the decision that they did, because it was the correct one. What I would have probably preferred to do is see them do was when this investigation came out and when, you know, Stan and Al and anyone else was going to be a part of it. My feeling is that they should have put that person on administrative leave, whoever may have been involved in that, and let a Kyle Davidson in that case take over in May or June, whenever the lawsuit was announced and the investigation began. Just like I believe the right thing to do back in 2010 would have been to say to Brad Aldrich, okay, these have come against you. These charges have come against you. Take a seat here. We can call up a video coach from Rockford to handle those responsibilities. If it's just a video coach, and granted, I understand that head coaches and video coaches, you know, are pretty much joined at the hip. If they particularly feel that they found the right guy and who knows exactly what to do for them. But in this instance, it's a video coach versus a kid who you invested an 11th overall draft pick in just a couple of years before and who had just come off a 52-goal season in 68 games in his final year in junior and then became pro, played 4 games for Rockford, and then was deemed good enough to become a black ace. You have all the potential of this kid versus a video coach. And I may be naive, but I'm thinking that you could find another video coach to do at least a good enough job to do what you need to do. And granted, it's the Stanley Cup final, but there had to be a guy in Rockford or someone else, or there could have been a collective, way of making up for what Brad Aldrich, quote unquote, gave them as a video coach in order to move forward. And as a result, you know, there were times in 2011 and 2012 and 2013, we were all saying to ourselves, why can't Kyle Beach's game translate in the NHL? It's exactly what they were looking for. A big dude, 6'3", who could put the puck in the net. We saw that in his final year in junior. And granted, it's not an automatic that they're going to carry that to the NHL. We now know years later some of the things that he was dealing with and the baggage he was dealing with that was obviously a roadblock and a hurdle from him becoming the NHL and you know, reaching the potential that he had in himself as a player.
How do you view the Stanley Cups now?
You know what? Someone asked me that a couple of weeks. Actually, the day it all happened, I did a Zoom with Josh Friedman for the GN Sports segment at 10:30. And he asked me kind of the same question. And, you know, I have some stuff from 2010, some memorabilia as a reporter, you know, champagne bottles from the locker room in Philly. You know, a bunch of pictures that have been framed, and I have a certain level of discomfort keeping them up right now. And I may decide not to keep them up. Maybe I should have taken them down already, but I don't think it diminishes the accomplishment, but it's definitely, you know, a stain on how they got there. And I don't know. I'm just a believer that they could have accomplished what they accomplished while doing the right thing after that game 4 victory over San Jose at the United Center on whatever it was, May 23rd that year. An hour later, they had that meeting. And I think they could have found a way to do the right thing. But you know what? Not to justify it, but obviously what was said in the report, they were blinded by the run for a Stanley Cup, the desire to have one. That's human nature in some, and I think everyone can understand that to a certain degree, but in retrospect, when you see the damage that it's done and the damage down the road to other individuals, what has occurred here, just inexcusable. So how I view the 2010 Cup, it definitely tarnishes it. the guys did what they did on the ice. And, you know, there's still this main question about who knew what, when, who was saying what, when. It's, you know, certain players' words against, you know, what we saw in the report and what Kyle Beach has to say. And whether there is any discrepancy or covering up in that, I think that has to come clean at some point, too.
Chris Bonin here on Sports Talk Chicago. Chris, how surprising was the Jeremy Colleton firing?
Not surprising at all. I think after that game Friday night in Winnipeg, it was definitely time. You know, you're waiting for that first win, which came way too long in the first place. But, you know, you were wondering if they would get a little juice off of that. They ended up playing two good periods against Carolina before they completely collapsed in the third period. And granted, Carolina is one of the best teams in the league. But you saw some steps in the right direction for what they needed to do and how they needed to play. And then for them to take a complete step backwards and go back to allowing a goal in the opening minute of a game, allowing a couple of goals in whatever it was, the first 3 or 4 minutes of the game. That's the narrative that we saw for the first 2 weeks of the season when they couldn't buy a victory. And for them to fall back into that, I think, you know, you were making a couple of steps up the foxhole and then you fell right back down, you know, on your backside. So if there was a time to make the move, it was becoming evident through what Jeremy was saying and through the performance on the ice that the messages weren't getting through. They weren't executing on the thing that Jeremy very staunchly defended throughout his 3 years here with his defensive system, the way they needed to play. We only saw flashes of that in spurts during the course of his 3 years here. And that last week, you know, when they finally got that victory, when they played fairly well over Carolina, you were looking to build momentum. For them to take such a huge step backwards, I think the handwriting was on the wall that there was going to be no digging out of it. And it was the right time to do it. Brad, it was a whirlwind for those 48 hours for them to decide what to do with Derek King. Now we're having a week or so where they can get some practices in. As we talk here on Wednesday afternoon, that they have you know, an opportunity to build a little bit of momentum. And they certainly have a chance to do that against the only team below them in the standings in the Arizona Coyotes on Friday when they come to the United Center. Then they have a number of days off before they will go on what will be a very challenging road trip. So if they can build some momentum, it seems like there's some positive energy there. They needed to turn the page from them knowing that they weren't able to execute at all what Jeremy was trying to preach, and Jeremy wasn't going to change his ways. Now with Derek King in there and running things at least through the end of the season, we'll see what they can do with it. Obviously the math's not in their favor, but you know, if they just check these things off game by game and can find a way to get a little bit better each and every game. I doubt this is a Craig Berube situation with St. Louis in 2019, but because, you know, there are a whole lot of good teams ahead of them already, and it's going to be a difficult challenge. But to make things respectable and to get better game by game, we'll see where this leads. And I think that's the only way that the team is thinking right now.
What's your take on Derek King? How's he commanded the team so far?
Well, so far, so good. They seem to get a kick out of him. Certainly a kick to interview. And you know, it's probably what they needed at the time. They probably would have needed any new voice at the time. But I think Kyle Davidson made the right decision in keeping Mark Crawford as kind of a right-hand man, getting a fresh new voice in there. And some of these guys, you know, a lot of these guys have played for Derek King in Rockford. And even some of the Blackhawks veterans may be familiar with him through, you know, different training camp, you know, practices and things like that. But I think that the fresh voice is needed. Let's see if you can get something out of Dylan Strome. It's a fresh start for him and any number of other guys. And the way he's handled it so far, he's a very self-deprecating guy, doesn't take himself too seriously. And that's probably what's needed in that room because, you know, Jeremy was genuine. He stuck to his guns. He was a very serious guy. But when we heard when he was first hired 3 years ago, his strength was supposed to be communication. And the message that he was trying to impart on this team with the way he wanted them to play obviously wasn't getting through from an execution perspective. So while some of the guys during the run last year were talking about buying into the system and that worked for that particular team, now a whole bunch of changes are made in the offseason, and Some of the new guys coming in are having to adjust to a system that they never played, and all of a sudden things are a mad scramble again. So what Derek King's providing, I think he's eventually going to implement some changes. He didn't come in like Jeremy tried to do after Joel and implement a system that a lot of these guys had never played or were very unfamiliar with, and took a long time to adapt to, if they ever adapted to it at all. I think Derek King is going to slowly but surely, once this team gets comfortable with him and once they can get some practices under their belt, try to do some tweaks to the system. And hopefully it'll pay off for them defensively a lot better in King's system than it ever did for Jeremy's.
What's the goal for the rest of the season here? Where would you like them to be by season's end after all this that's happened?
Well, that's a tough call. Obviously, the pipe dream is to make some kind of miraculous run and get themselves back in the playoffs. I just don't think that's going to happen. There's too many good teams in front of them. So if they can work their way back to respectability, to a 500 record, the bad part is that the deals made in the offseason sacrifices what probably would have been a real nice first-round draft pick here this year. So that's definitely going to hurt them. We heard Kyle Davidson asked about that specifically when he was available on Sunday morning prior to that game against Nashville. And he said, "Would we like to have it? Obviously, it's a great asset to have, but we just can't dwell on it." And as the season goes along, if you know it becomes more and more evident that there's not going to be some miraculous run and the trade deadline comes, perhaps there are some assets that they can move out. The unfortunate thing is a lot of these veterans that they brought in the offseason, you know, they have multi-year contracts. So if they were able to try and get some, you know, draft assets back, it's going to be very difficult for other teams in the salary cap era to take on these veterans who still have term left on their contract at some pretty decent salary cap hits. So I think from that aspect, what Stan did in the offseason, it hasn't worked. It might not work with the way things are trending. So that's going to end up burning them in terms of, you know, bouncing from one end of the spectrum to the other on, are we doing a rebuild? Are we going half in? Are we going to try and go for it this year? And, you know, from that aspect, it's going to really hurt them from if they want to go back to the rebuild perspective here. But I think there's no doubt whether Kyle Davidson is going to be the guy moving forward here at the end of the season, that's all going to be reevaluated. But if they make things respectable and Kyle is given the full-time job, you know, he'll have to evaluate Derek on his own merit with what he's done this season. If they bring in someone from the outside to, you know, do a complete wash of hockey operations, then anything's left. So I think just to remain competitive, to find a way not to give up, as Marc-Andre Fleury said last night, hey, we're not giving up as many odd man rushes and two-on-ones. If we don't see so much of what we saw in the first 9 or 10 games of the season, and to remain competitive, I think that's a step in the right direction.
Chris Bowden here on Sports Talk Chicago. Chris, how'd you evaluate Justin Fields' performance on Monday?
I loved it. I think it was a great step in the right direction. Now, this doesn't guarantee he's going to Canton in 15 or 20 years by any means, but I think what we're seeing here, especially in the last couple of weeks, is incremental progress. Rough go of it in Tampa Bay. You know what they had it on their mind, especially with them so vulnerable on the offensive line. They were going to throw the kitchen at the kid. And while there were flashes in that game against Green Bay, 3 weeks ago, put together two solid drives. The rest of the day, the offense was really didn't put much together. And then he hopefully hit rock bottom in that game. I shouldn't say he, but they hit rock bottom offensively in that game against Tampa Bay. But then we saw some strides forward against San Francisco. And what I really liked in that game against Pittsburgh is he was much more decisive. He seems to have a better grasp of, you know, what defenses are doing to him, what to look for, who his personnel is, how to make those adjustments. And it was great to see the fourth quarter come back with the help of a good special teams contest. But when he had the money on the line and all of a sudden he got the ball with, 3 minutes left, he marched that team right down the field, maybe even gave Pittsburgh too much time in order to get the ball back and have that go ahead and eventual game winning field goal. But you know, he got roughed up in the first half of that game, but he made some adjustments. The team made some adjustments. And I think seeing how decisive he was, I think that was a huge step from 2 weeks ago against Tampa Bay to a week ago against San Francisco to Monday night against Pittsburgh. And, you know, with a bye week coming in and a home game against Baltimore, I can't wait to see what happens against the Ravens.
Should the Bears have won that game? Are you concerned about the result, knowing how Fields developed?
Am I concerned about them not winning that game? No, I don't think so. I was kind of disappointed. You know, the defense actually seemed to take a step forward from what they had in that fourth quarter of the second half against San Francisco and what happened against Tampa Bay. But then when Pittsburgh got the ball back, the penalties, everyone's talking about the penalties and, lining up offsides, on that final drive for Pittsburgh, making the mistakes that they did. That seemed to take away the strides that they were able to take against Pittsburgh earlier in that contest. So to me, that's more of a coaching concern. We're seeing some of the same things crop up over and over again, whether it's Matt Nagy, where it's Sean Desai, the game's on the line. How are you lining up in the neutral zone, which is a basic thing that was taught, in Pee Wee and Pop Warner in high school. With a game on the line, how are you making those kinds of mistakes and just handing yardage over to your opponent when it's crunch time? To me, that was the most disappointing thing. And obviously now at 3-6, I think it's going to be a long shot for Matt Nagy and this coaching staff to be back. I think it might be a long shot failing to make the playoffs if Ryan Pace's career continues as general manager of the Bears. The most disappointing thing in that is that, Matt Nagy was given this final opportunity to do something with a young quarterback. And while we are seeing strides right now, the results have come slowly, and the results from a one-loss standpoint are not coming in. Now, if you bring in somebody new, it's going to be a whole new learning curve. Two systems in two seasons that Justin Fields is going to have to learn if someone new comes in. Is that what they're going to have to do? I think that's what they're going to eventually have to do at the end of the season. They're going to have to face up to that. I just feel for Justin Fields and the fact that, he's going to have to set a reset button after his rookie year, when there was so much of an opportunity with what he gained in this first year in one system to move forward. It's not the right system or the right guy, I think, to coach him up when it's all said and done. He's just going to have to live with that. And hopefully the Bears find the right guy, whether it's GM, head coach, or both situations here after the season.
What's your evaluation of Nagy and Pace up to this point?
I think it's time. I think, Ryan Pace in particular, while I like him as a person, there have been flashes of great moves that he's made during the course of his time here, great draft picks, and others that are just simply head scratchers that have been colossal failures, in the same way in the free agent market. And to take the gamble that he did with Justin Fields by not shoring up an offensive line to protect the kid. I'm not saying, I think I said this on our last podcast, I was never a real big Charles Leno fan, but at least he answered the bell. He was competent at what he did. I felt the same way about Robert Massey as well. So not to make that investment, to make the gamble that he did in the defensive backfield as well, putting some young guys back there. I think Jalen Johnson's going to be great, but some of the decisions in the defensive backfield heading into this season, I thought were mistakes. There has to be a way to find a balance in your salary cap and your personnel situation. And I think there have been some swings and misses on that. Now, during the course of this, we've learned maybe you got a guy in Larry Borum. Now that he is finally healthy and being thrown out there, I think he's held his own in the couple of starts that he has gotten so far. We don't know what Tevin Jenkins was, but that was obviously a gamble for a kid who had back problems, had never played left tackle in college, and to rely on him coming into training camp to be the guy and take that over. Now, thankfully, they found a guy in Peters who was, you weren't sure whether he was going to be competent at all after not signing on with the team in free agency, but he's come in and done a fairly decent job, but he's going to be a stopgap. So I think Ryan Pace, kind of protected his backside with that signing after all was said and done once Peters got a couple of games under his legs. But yeah, the consistency of the decision-making with Ryan Pace, he has had a lot of time to do this. And he's had one playoff appearance so far, same for Matt Nagy, and we haven't seen the needle move forward since that first season in 2018 when Matt Nagy took over. The defense was great, and Matt Nagy did just enough when we were all kind of excited and intrigued on what he was going to be able to do. He wasn't able to get the job done with Mitch Trubisky, And now it's been fits and starts with what we've seen from Justin Fields, but hopefully it's onward and upward. But I'm just a believer, along with many, that it's time for them to make a tough decision and find some new blood here to bring in to management and the head coaching role after this year.
You know, you made a great point, too. A new head coach means a new system. So two systems in 2 years for a rookie quarterback. I wonder how that's going to affect Justin Fields.
Yeah, and there's going to have to be a whole lot of work. Whoever the Bears hopefully will and do bring in, you know, whether it's mid-late January, there's going to have to be a whole lot of off-season study and a whole lot of, work that needs to be done to familiarize himself with that playbook during all the off-season program and whatnot. So not that I don't think he's capable. It's just slowing down that process for him where, you know, by the end of the season, things are going to become natural for him in this system. And we all know that when new head coaches come in, they may run the same plays, but it's called something different. So everybody being on the same page is going to be a challenge, at least early on, if they do bring somebody in.
More to come with Chris Botta in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Chris, two more questions before we finish up. First off, your favorite player to interview is who?
Boy, I'm going to have to give me some thought about that. there have been some good ones. Always loved interviewing Mark Grace when he was with the Cubs. You're going to have probably ask me to pick one guy, which is going to be a challenge. And I'm kind of, Patrick Sharp, when he was with the Blackhawks, was always a great interview. Nicklas Hjalmarsson was a guy who always shot straight with you. Whereas Sharp had more of the sense of humor, Hjalmarsson was more of the straight shooter, but he would tell it like it is. So let's see. I'm probably going to be missing somebody here. And I'll probably have to, once I give it some more thought, tweet it out. Once you tweet this out, I'll have my answer on one thing here and then I'll think of somebody else and have to do that. But I'm going to say overall, I think Pauly Konurko was the best guy to interview, always available, always thoughtful. The problem with Paul is you only wanted a 15-second soundbite. That would be a little difficult, but he would go on and on about something, but you'd always learn something talking to him, always willing. And, always intelligent, had a little bit of sneaky sense of humor. So if I had to pick someone off the top of my head right now, it's Paul Konurko. But once you tweet out the link and I think of somebody else, I'll tweet another name.
Chris, before we finish up today, last question. What's the greatest basketball game you've ever played? Greatest performance for you?
Now you're asking me back in my playing days, which only went to high school. I learned the hard way that there was going to be no basketball career once high school ended. But again, I was fortunate enough to be on a state championship team my junior year over at Luther South, where your dad went, which I found out the first time, right for the first time we podcasted here together. So best game, got to go high school. And even though I wasn't a high scorer or a big contributor, and I don't even, I have to go back. Maybe I only scored 4 or 6 points in this particular game, but there was a sectional final my senior year. We were battling, and actually the coach eventually used me off the bench. I was in the starting lineup most of the season, but then he brought a freshman up who replaced me in the lineup as a senior. So I had a little bit of chip on my shoulder, but he thought he'd be better with me running off the bench as a sixth man. So anyway, sectional final, really close game. Actually, we were maybe trailing in the first half, and I was a down and dirty player. One of my favorite players as a kid growing up was Jerry Sloan. So, scrappy defense, take a charge, do all that. So I don't even know if I scored any points in this game. If I did, maybe it was 4 or 6 points or something like that. But he put me in, I think maybe midway second quarter. And, I took a couple charges and got the ball back for us. Packed house, I think it was down at Hersher High School. I can't remember. Maybe it was even Hersher who we played. So it was kind of a real road game, but just coming in, doing some of the small things, picking up a steal, grabbing a rebound, taking a couple of charges. And when you convert on the other end, all of a sudden your team has some momentum. You know, maybe I hit a couple of buckets and made a few free throws in that game. The stat line wasn't all that impressive, but it was doing kind of the little things that kind of perhaps switched momentum for our team. So that was my senior year. We won state my junior year. So we had a target on our backs our senior year. So we ended up winning that sectional game, went on to the super sectional where we got knocked off by Walter Downing and Providence. That was our big rivalry. We had Walter Downing and Providence. Walter went on to play for DePaul. And I think he's now a teacher in the Western suburbs in the Hinsdale School District or something like that.
Wow.
So it was always back and forth. My entire 4 years, Walter Downing and that Providence team, Luther South, we had Pierre Cooper, unfortunately couldn't play college ball. We had Mike Conley, who ended up, his kid is playing for the Memphis Grizzlies. And he went on to win a gold medal in the triple jump in the Olympics and won a state championship all by himself in track and field in four events for Luther South. So we ended up losing in that super sectional. That's how my basketball career ended in that super sectional my senior year. And then I tried to play basketball in different leagues as an adult, ended up blowing out my knee and all that stuff. The glory days were over with. So, but that was probably the most memorable one in terms of being able to contribute something to a meaningful win, you know, in what was a pretty important game. You know, not a great stat line or anything like that, but maybe my teammates and maybe my coach also realized at least I contributed something to that.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure to talk with you. And best wishes for the Blackhawks moving forward, covering them and WGN-TV as well. And I'm looking forward to the next time we chat. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Same to all you, everyone. Have a great Thanksgiving. Happy holidays to all you. And, yeah, ring me up anytime you want to chat again, Jeff.
I talked there with Chris Bowden. That'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Chris Bowden himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTobin, Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at John G Sports and on Facebook at John Zaglul. And if you want to watch more of this show, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe. So long, everyone.
No! No! Where are the turtles?